Okay, we'll move to the next case of the morning, which is Joseph Malinowski versus Judy Smith. And you're Mr. Hennick?
Yes, Your Honor. May it please the Court, my name is Robert Hennick. I represent Joseph Malinowski on this appeal. The issue before the Court is whether the exclusion of exculpatory evidence from the complaining witness's school counselor denied the defendant the right to present a defense and justifies federal habeas relief. Now, obviously, under the anti-terrorism amendments, or AEDPA, the federal court is barred from granting habeas relief on a claim that has been decided on the merits by the state court unless the defendant can show that the state court decision was contrary to or an unreasonable application of controlling Supreme Court precedent. So what exactly did the state court of appeals do on this particular issue? Well, the state court of appeals, early in its decision, correctly identified the issue as being a constitutional one. I have to concede that. But when it actually got down to addressing the issue of exclusion of this evidence, it focused entirely on state evidentiary rules.
But why does that matter? I mean, I recognize if we were starting out and it were May of 1996, and we were trying to figure out what AEDPA meant, maybe we would be thinking about whether the state court had to have an explicit discussion of the federal constitutional ground. But as you well know, there's a lot of water under the bridge, and in fact, the Supreme Court and this court and the other courts of appeals have said, well, no, we're not sitting here grading the state court opinions. If the bottom line of the state court opinion is consistent or doesn't violate these various standards, is not contrary to or an unreasonable application of U.S. Supreme Court precedent, that's all. Maybe the state court didn't say anything further about it than to acknowledge. But why does that matter?
Well, I acknowledge that the state court does not have to cite Supreme Court cases. It doesn't even have to know about Supreme Court cases. But I believe to have a constitutional decision, you have to at least have some kind of constitutional analysis. Now, perhaps I should just pass on that, go to the fact the contrary to or unreasonable application of, because I think it's even more clear there. If
contrary to.
Oh, contrary to, sorry. Yeah,
how is it contrary?
Okay. If we infer that the state court actually did reach a constitutional decision, even though it never cited to any constitutional authority or cited to any constitutional analysis, then what we have to assume is that its decision is its basis for rejecting the constitutional claim. That is that because, according to the state court, we have to accept, admission of this evidence would be a violation of state evidentiary rules, then that necessarily also satisfies the constitutional requirement of the right to present a defense.
So, could I ask you, though, even though the state trial court originally refused to take a look at these records, on the motion for reconsideration, the state trial court was persuaded that it should take a look at those records, and it performed an in-camera review of the records. And I don't see what the point of its doing that. I mean, your opponents make this argument. What was the point of doing that if not to evaluate the question whether there was something that would overcome the privilege? The records certainly were presumptively privileged. They were from the school counselor. They were about exchanges of information there. And I don't know what else to make of it other than the fact that the state court itself recognized that if there was strong enough cause or if it was important enough to the defense, it would come in.
The state trial court did make that assessment of the privileged school records, the school records, the psychological records of the school. It did make that analysis, decided that none of those records was relevant. I think what the court's point is that why would it bother if it didn't know that it could trump the privilege, that the constitutional right to present this evidence could trump the privilege. And I think in that particular case, the state trial court did understand that. However, it made no effort to assess that when it reached the different decision on whether or not the testimony of the counselor, his opinion of the complainant's trust or truthfulness in general, the problems that she has, the emotional problems that cause her to have difficulties perceiving and relating the truth, he did not make that analysis there.
But you know, the state appellate court said, as far as that went, her general reputation for telling the truth, that there were other ways that that could have been explored. And it occurred to me, I realize this one neighbor testified, but I don't know why counsel didn't, let's say, take the depositions of her regular teachers. You know, all of the teachers aren't counselors. And I think there was some material even from the teachers that might have supported this point. But the basic idea being that there were alternative ways, and maybe counsel didn't go far enough with them, but that's not a reason to say that the state court's decision was an unreasonable one.
Well, the state court's decision, number one, was contrary to controlling precedent because the Court of Appeals decision, which is the last one to rule on the merits, is the one that we have to look at under this court's decisions. So not the trial court, the Court of Appeals. And the Court of Appeals simply looked at whether or not this was a violation of state evidentiary law, which we know from Rock v. Arkansas and Davis v. Alaska, that whole line of cases is not the proper standard. The proper standard is whether the defendant was allowed to present relevant, favorable evidence, and whether any state court evidence rules were applied arbitrarily or mechanistically or disproportionately to the underlying purpose of the rules.
I think that's why they mentioned that the reputation for truthfulness wasn't explored, was it? General reputation.
There was one witness, and I can't even pronounce her name, who was a friend. I would point out it's in Exhibit U, pages 155 to 56. That's her entire testimony.
And this neighbor, right?
Who just? I don't think she was a neighbor, no. She was somebody who said that she only, on occasion, to socialize with the Malinowski family a few times a year over the 4 years that she had known them, and on cross-examination admitted that she only had a one-on-one dealing with the complainant on one occasion. And based on that, she testified that she had an opinion as to her reputation for truth and veracity, that she was an untruthful person. So that was the total evidence that was presented at trial about her reputation. The evidence that we were trying, or I believe should have been admitted, does not go to her reputation for truthfulness, but this particular counselor's opinion as to her truthfulness.
Were you representing Mr. Malinowski at the state trial?
No. Nor on the direct appeal.
You did not ever say that he received ineffective assistance of counsel or anything like that?
Okay. No.
Now, this truthfulness determination, you're saying that could have been something outside of the confidential, the privileged conferences he had with her?
Actually, no. We are admitting that the testimony that we want, that should have been admitted in our view, was privileged.
It would be dependent on that, then.
Yes.
Okay.
And actually, it's the privileged nature of the communications and the privileged nature of the information that Mr. Bozeman possessed that actually makes it unique. It cannot be replicated elsewhere, and also I think adds to its credibility.
But you wanted like that extra boost that this was a professional who thought that she was a congenital liar, not just regular people on the street.
Right,
like.
And someone who had experience with her over a period of time in her relationship with adults and how she responded and how she lied to adults and authority.
Take me back. There was an in-camera inspection of that material?
Yes. There was an in-camera inspection of the school records, which is something different. We are not challenging that. Although the district court went through and reviewed them, we are not challenging the failure to admit the actual documents or to release those. We are only addressing the exclusion of this witness's testimony about his opinions and observations. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Ms. Tripp?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. I'm Kate Lloyd Tripp, representing the respondent in this matter. Let me first say that I think that whether or not the ADPA applies, Mr. Malinowski is still not entitled to habeas relief. However, I think, like the district court, that it's an inescapable conclusion that the ADPA does apply here. As in Muth, the Court of Appeals recognized the constitutional claim on the here on the second page of its decision, and although it went on when it disposed of the claim to speak in terms of what the trial court had done and maybe or purely in Wisconsin state law, I think that it's under this court's precedence that's still an adjudication on the merits. It's certainly not a procedural disposition. So that said, Mr. Malinowski hasn't pointed to any decision of the U.S. Supreme Court that the Court of Appeals decision is either contrary to or of which it's an unreasonable application. The cases that Mr. Malinowski cites, Davis, Chambers, Washington, and Rock, all involve evidence that the defendant sought to admit that couldn't have been admitted from another source.
But I guess his point, I mean, what he infers, I mean, one has to do a lot of inferring with this state appellate court decision, I think you'd have to admit it's pretty terse, is that state evidentiary rules trump the Sixth Amendment and the Due Process Clause. And, of course, that would be wrong. That would be contrary to this line of Supreme Court decisions that he's cited. What gives us confidence that that's not what the state appellate court thought?
Well, I think, as this court said, I think in, is it Pack or Dunlap, that the Constitution is satisfied when the state court gives earnest consideration to the possibility that excluding the evidence could violate a defendant's.
And how do we have any confidence in that based on this particular state Supreme Court opinion? That's my concern here, because if they had even thrown in a sentence saying, we know that state evidentiary rules have to yield to the Sixth Amendment, but we see no reason for it to do so here, or, you know, anything, wouldn't have to be long-winded, just but there's nothing.
Well, I admit that it's a terse decision on that ground, but I think that when the Court of Appeals said that the trial court correctly ruled, that we go back to then what the trial court did, which was to hold two hearings on the matter and review the records in camera and have an offer of proof from the counselor.
But so, we don't know why the trial court decided that, whether the trial court thought that the counselor's testimony would be cumulative, whether the trial court thought that the privilege can never yield, you know, that there were some things in the records that were privileged and some which were not, which I think is actually the case. I think some things might have been from teachers and other sources that would not have been privileged. There are so many possibilities here. How do we really know that even the trial court, much less the appellate court, which is the court whose decision we're reviewing, even made a call on the federal constitutional point?
Well, I think had they not recognized the constitutional issue, there wouldn't have been several motions on it. There wouldn't have been an in-camera inspection. It would have been a flat-out evidentiary decision based on the statute. Given the amount of time and thoughtfulness with which the court went through these hearings, I think that it's implicit in that the constitutional claim was recognized.
Was there an offer of proof?
Yes. At least at the first hearing, through Mr. Malinowski's attorney, stated that Mr. Bosman would testify that, in his opinion, she was an untruthful person who had difficulty perceiving and relating the truth.
It's hard for me to see, and I don't want to say too much about records that are sealed, but maybe I'll put it the other way around. It's easy for me to see why a defense attorney in a situation that is so dependent on credibility assessments would want very much to put before a jury the professional opinion that this young lady had a lot of problems telling the truth.
Yes, I agree. But I think
that's the whole issue here. It's actually more like those other Supreme Court decisions, I think, than you're conceding. The central issue here happens to be credibility. It doesn't happen to be alibi or other sorts of things.
Right.
Hypnosis,
but
as
Your Honor stated earlier, there certainly, if she were such a disreputable person, you would think that there would be plenty of other witnesses to testify to that fact. And I think that Mr. Malinowski's position almost, or seems to me to mean, that the privilege must always yield. When I don't see, if in this case, I don't see when, given his position, you would ever be able to assert the privilege.
Well, the counselor isn't actually being asked to reveal anything that she said. He's being asked to reveal his bottom line assessment of her overall behavior, which is that she lies.
But which is only available to him because of privileged sessions that she had with him.
Right. It's his conclusion based on a lot of data, but he's not saying that she said to me, on this day I said this and on that day I said that. He's not revealing a single word she spoke.
No, but the privilege still exists for anything that he's gleaned from those sessions. And additionally, he was her counselor from kindergarten to sixth grade. When these events occurred, she was in eighth grade. So I just, although I'm not saying that evidence wouldn't have been relevant, it's still sort of remote. And it seems to me that there was another witness that testified, and it seems to me that he could have gotten this information from other sources, unlike the defendants in Davis and Chambers, et cetera.
What was the offer of proof based on?
Well, apparently this counselor revealed to Mr. Malinowski's attorney that he thought that the victim was...
I mean, that's where he got it. He got it from the counselor.
Yes. Yes.
There's no complaint at this stage of the game about decisions not to order psychological testing of her or anything?
No, my understanding is that this case is solely about the testimony from the counselor. Unless there's anything else, I guess I too will rest on my brief and urge this court to affirm the district court's decision. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. We'll give you about a minute here to finish up.
Thank you. We do know what the trial court decided and why the trial court excluded the evidence. It's in Exhibit D, which is a transcript of September 7th, 2001, on page 16. And what he held is, next, with the idea that Mr. Bozeman is going to testify, I have previously ruled that the victim, through her mother, had claimed privilege and that he was a counselor, and that anything that he may know as a result of being a counselor is not properly admitted. And I believe he addressed or advised the court that he did not have any knowledge of the facts of this case independent of his role as her school counselor. I also wish to point out, basically, that you can't have somebody saying that somebody else is telling the truth in a particular incident. There was nothing there that indicates that he was applying any kind of constitutional analysis. With regard to the privilege must always yield, I would direct the court's attention to the Davis case. Davis v. Alaska similarly dealt with a kind of a privilege. I'm sorry, my time is...
We'll finish your
time. That Davis also dealt with privilege, and in that case, it held clearly that even though there is a legitimate state interest in a privilege, that the defendant cannot be required to bear the full burden of vindicating that interest. And therefore, in a case like that, it can also be vindicated by not having the individual testify.
Okay, thanks. Thanks to both counsel. This case will be taken under advisement.